Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio, brought to you by the OU Israel Center in Jerusalem. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. Advanced apologies for being a little bit under the weather and more nasal than usual. But as they say, the show must go on, and Baruch Hashem, I'm okay. This show is for Shabbat Parshat Yitro, also known as Yisro. It is Yom Chamishi, that's Thursday, the 18th of Shvat, the 16th of February. We're standing in between what used to be known as Lincoln's birthday and Washington's birthday. And I understand that for many, many years it's been observed as President's Day, which is next Monday. The only reason I bring it up is because the Israel Center in Jerusalem is located on Keren HaYesod. That street is relatively short. It runs from Kikar Paris to Kikar Plumber, Liberty Bell Park, up to the King's Hotel area, and off of Keren HaYesod. There are a total, I think, of 7 side streets. 5 of them are named for Jewish literary figures, and 2 of them are named for presidents of the United States. One, Washington, and the other, Lincoln. Just know here that they don't accept the silent L in Lincoln. So if you ever want to know how to get there and you stop an Israeli on the street, you can't ask him for Rehov Lincoln. You have to say, for Rehov Lincoln. And Washington, of course, is Washington. So have a nice President's Day. Psalm 130, Tehillim Kuflamed. Shir ha-ma'alot bima'amakim karaticha Adonai. Adonai shema v'koli tihyena aznecha kashivot l'kol tach Adonai. Im avonot tishmaria Adonai mi ya'amod ki imacha haslicha l'ma'an tivarei. Kiviti Adonai kivata nafshi v'lidvaro ho'cholti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha'chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifde et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanetunim batzara uvashivya ha'omedim bein bayam uvein bayamasha. Hamakom yirachem aleihem v'yotziyem mitzara lirvacha u'meyafela l'ora u'mishimud l'geula hashta ba'agala u'vizman kariv v'nomar amein. As regular listeners know from past shows, sometimes, not every week, although I should, I give a shiur to the, or Dvar Torah, or mini shiur, whatever you want to call it, to the Torah Tidbits folders, the intrepid group of volunteers who week in, week out, fold Torah Tidbits and bundle them for delivery so that many people can read the hard copy of Torah Tidbits. You are listening to Torah Tidbits Audio, and the electronic version of Torah Tidbits via email or the website are available just for the asking. You can subscribe free in several different formats to the electronic version by email. Send me an email to tt@ou.org and request the text file, the email message, the PRC for Palm Pilots or Palm Devices, whatever they're called today. PDF files, they're large, but they're more attractive than the text. And you'll see the options that are available. The website is www.ou.org/, and there's good news for the people who get confused between the slashes. You can do either slash, Torah, T-O-R-A-H, another slash, T-T, and that will give you the Torah Tidbits homepage, and from there, all of the features available. As I was saying, I recorded a mini shiur to the Torah Tidbits folders. I edited out some of my coughing and wheezing, but not all of it, so please bear with me, and here is the first part of that shiur. Okay, let me start with a concept that exists in Torah, called Ein Seder Mukdam U'Mu'uchar BaTorah. There are a lot of times where
some, not all, commentaries have a problem with what seems to be a sequence in the Torah. Something seems to be out of place. And very often they answer the question by saying, it is out of place. This particular portion happened at a different time, happened before the event that followed, or vice versa, but the Torah has a reason for putting it dafka here. There are commentaries that don't like that. They said, ma pitom, you know, the Torah doesn't go out of order. But there are some places where it's very hard to deny that there's an order question. And that became, it's not really an answer, but it became an explanation. It's out of order for a certain reason. And it's okay to be out of order because Ein Seder Mukdam U'Mukhar BaTorah. Now, let's bring us to the beginning of Parshat Yitro, or really go back a little. In Parshat Bo, we came out of Egypt. In Parshat Bishalach, we went through the sea and sang the song of the sea, and then went to Rephidim and had a few experiences, and we're approaching Sinai. If we were to skip chapter 18, which is the beginning of Yitro, true, it would make Yitro a small center, but if we were to skip chapter 18 and begin at chapter 19, Bachodesh HaShlishi, in the third month, Letzeit B'nai Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, when the Jews came out of Egypt, they came to Midbar Sinai. And then the Torah continues with the events of Sinai, Matan Torah. You would not notice that a whole chapter was taken out. Nothing in that chapter belongs between the attack of Amalek and coming to Sinai. The sequence is not interrupted at all. I shouldn't say that. It is interrupted. The sequence is not missing anything. If you pull out chapter 18 and you have Yetziat Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yamsuf, Matan Torah. Now, if chapter 18 does exist, which it does, you have to look at it not just for what it is, but ask, what's it doing here? Because it could easily have been put after the events of Matan Torah, and as an introduction to Parshat Mishpatim, it would fit perfectly. Vayishma Yitro, that's how the Sedra begins. Yitro heard, Kol Asher Asa Elokim LeMoshe UliYisrael Amo, everything that God did for Moshe, his son-in-law, and Israel, the nation. Ki Hotzi Hashem Et Yisrael mi Mitzrayim. God had taken them out of Egypt. Yitro takes Tzipporah, who was with him when Moshe went back to Mitzrayim, and the two sons of Moshe who were born there, and brings them to Moshe. Commentaries say, Vayishma Yitro, what did he hear? So if you are in that school of thought that doesn't like this business of out of order, so the things that you hear, you turn back a page, and you say he must have heard about the Makot, Yetziat Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yamsuf, the Song of the Sea, and the attack of Amalek. That's plenty to hear and come. In fact, it fits in the Psukim, because the Pasuk doesn't mention Sinai. It mentions Ki Hotzi Hashem et Yisrael mi Mitzrayim, etc., etc. So many commentaries are satisfied with that. They're satisfied that there was plenty of information for Yitro to have heard about that motivated him to bring Tzipporah and the boys to Moshe. And therefore, you're not yet compelled to do a Ein Seder Mukdam U'Mukhar BaTorah kind of analysis. Now, here's what I discovered. I haven't seen it any place, so I'm taking credit for it. But I will be partially happy and partially sad if I find the commentary that speaks about it. I actually said it to someone on the phone yesterday, and he said, never noticed that. When he says never noticed that, he means in the text, and he means he never saw any commentaries that noticed it. So maybe I got something here. The first half, almost, of chapter 18 Vayishma Yitro, Vayikach Yitro, he took the Tzipora of the family. Vayavo Yitro, he came to Moshe. Moshe goes out to greet him. Vayisaper Moshe Lechotno, he tells him what happened. And also there, doesn't have to include Matan Torah. Vayomer Yitro, Baruch Hashem, Asher Hitzil Etchem Miyad Mitzrayim Umiyad Paro, Asher Hitzil Etam Mitachat Yad Mitzrayim. Again, you don't necessarily feel that there's something out of order yet, because he keeps speaking about, wow, amazing, God took you out of Egypt. And now I know how great God is, and we understand this to be Yitro coming to become part of the Jewish people. Now, at Sheni, the Aliyah, after 12 psukim of Yitro, you have the next half of the chapter. The second half of chapter 18 is the Aliyah of Sheni and Shlishi. Okay? In that Aliyah, or in those Aliyot, you have Vayhimi Moharat. It was on the following day. The obvious plain choice of the following day is the day after he came with Tzipora and the boys. Vayeshev Moshe Lishpot et Ha'am, he saw Moshe sitting to judge the people. Vayamod Ha'am al Moshe min haboker ad ha'erev, and the people stood on long lines all day long waiting to get to talk to Moshe. Now here's the observation which leads me to suggest, well, you see in a moment. Vayar Chotein Moshe does not say Vayar Yitro. And it had plenty of Yitro in the first part. Vayishma Yitro, Vayavo Yitro, Vayomer Yitro, Vayikach Yitro, over and over again. Here, it's the father-in-law of Moshe saw how the people were waiting for judgment, and he said, what is this thing that is happening with the people? Why are you sitting alone in judgment from morning till night? Vayomer Moshe Lechotno. Moshe responded to his father-in-law, not Yitro, to the same person, but the language to his father-in-law. And he says to him, people come to find out what the halacha is in a situation. Vayomer Chotein Moshe Elav, the father-in-law of Moshe, said to him, very unusual to be like that, Lo tov hadavar, it's not good. Asher atov said, what you're doing is not good. Because the people will get disgusted having to wait all day, and you'll get disgusted, etc., etc. And this is what I recommend. This shows how unusual a son-in-law Moshe was, that he listened to his father-in-law, who wasn't even supporting him at the time, and he gives him a suggestion of how to choose judges for the people and to divide the heavy weight of judgment with them. Vayishma Moshe Lekol Chotno. Again, not Lekol Yitro, but to the voice of his father-in-law. And Moshe chose people. Vayishlach Moshe et Chotno, Vayelech Lo El Arzo, and Moshe wished him a farewell, and he went back. The problem having this piece in sequence is it doesn't describe B'nai Yisrael a week or so before Matan Torah. Before Matan Torah, they were leaving Egypt, traveling from one place to another, reviewing some preliminary mitzvot that they got, but they hadn't settled down to life yet. The description here is after everything, after the euphoria of Kriyat Yam Suf and Matan Torah, Yitzhak Mitzrayim, Kriyat Yam Suf, Matan Torah, and now the people are setting down to a normal way of life. Little things happen. His dog ate up my slippers, you know, so does he have to pay me for my slippers? All kind of little things which belong after Parshat Mishpatim. In fact, Rashi says, Vayehi Mimocharat, it was on the next day. Rashi says it was the day following Yom Kippur, when Moshe came down from Sinai with the second set of Luchot, and the people settled down to normal behavior. Look, we I don't have at my fingertips the arguments against Bible criticism, but I know that there's nothing wrong with the traditional presentation, especially when you look into Chazal and you see, yes, this piece is out of order. It properly belongs at the end of Yitro or the beginning of Mishpatim, in other words, after Matan Torah, but, okay, suggest to me why it was here, and if you're satisfied, or not, that's up to you, if you're satisfied with the answer, then you don't need another kind of theory to explain it. If you want to make a little bit more of a chult out of this, you will find that the events of Matan Torah in the bulk of Yitro, arriving at Sinai, and the preparation for Matan Torah, and the experience of itself with the Aseret HaDibrot, is followed by Mishpatim, which contains 53 different mitzvot out of the Torah, most of which are very down-to-earth, day-to-day kind of mitzvot, which would be fine, except that the end of Mishpatim goes back to the story of Matan Torah. In other words, I see, I understand, not based on myself, on what I've read, that there is a purposeful, excuse me, by God, a purposeful mix of the mundane, everyday kind of text and the awe-inspiring, wow experience of Matan Torah to make a point of saying that Jewish life is not made up of the miracles of Yetziat Mitzrayim, the miracles of the crossing of the sea, the miracles of Matan Torah, and that's it. It's mostly made up of living everyday life as a Jew. So, however great the experience of Matan Torah was, when you have to talk tachlis of what to do when your neighbor's dog chews up your slipper, and a whole variety of other things like that, it allows the wonders of this period of time to be assimilated into a real everyday life kind of thing that you can now perpetuate as Judaism. You cannot perpetuate a miracle because a miracle is a one-shot thing. When that miracle is presented to us with a healthy mix of tachlis, then the miracle becomes part of the collective memory of the people, and the tachlis is not a memory. The tachlis is our way of life. I'm satisfied with that. I don't know if I'm getting it across. But if you were to isolate the wondrous part of Matan Torah, isolate meaning the mountain smoky and dark and flashing lightning and the sound of thunder and an ever-increasing shofar and the people trembling and all of that, and put that by itself, we would not really relate to the experience of Matan Torah as part of our lives. Parshat Mishpatim, you do relate, because it talks there about, I have to go into the store, I'm not allowed to bring in a bicycle, can you keep an eye on my bike till I come out? That's a plain halachic issue right out of the Torah called Shomer Chinam. I'm asking you to be a guardian. When I come back and I say, where's my bike? You said it was stolen. Well, what happened? I went to that candy store just to buy a pack of Raisinets. And when I got back, I saw guys riding it out. That's negligent. Or these two big guys came, they pushed me to the ground, and they stole the bike. Big difference. But that's part of halacha that we can relate to. Har Sinai smoking with God's presence, we don't relate to As I said, it's part of the collective memory of the Jewish people, and it's part of our who we are. But to plug it in to everyday life, it needs to be mixed with a down-to-earth father-in-law visiting his son-in-law, seeing what he does, what father-in-law doesn't like to see what his son-in-law is doing. Are you able to make a parnassa that takes care of my daughter kind of thing? And what father-in-law could resist making some suggestions. I don't think you're doing it right. That's why Moshe was an exemplary son-in-law. Because he didn't say, why don't you go golfing or something like that. Then we could attribute the invention of golf to Moshe Rabbeinu, who sent his father-in-law there so he wouldn't have to have him over his shoulder. But I kid. Kidding aside, as they say, the image of practical, you can't answer everybody's question, the people will get disgusted with that. You need to teach a group of people who will be able to handle most of the questions. And Moshe took the advice. And then the fact that at the end of Mishpatim, we have the conclusion of the events of Sinai, wrap it up together. It's all part of that experience. So there was not an interlude, but a whole chunk of Mishpatim, as I said, 53 mitzvot, very big sedra, talking about things which we don't associate with Matan Torah, but we have to associate with them. Lo tevashel gedi b'chalev imo, that you have to keep milk and meat separate, is not in the Aseret HaDibrot, but it is in the Sinai experience, part of Matan Torah, which I can prove not by a statement in the Gemara. I can say, look at this. Chapter 19 in Yitro begins the events of Sinai, and it continues, and it is not completed until the end of Mishpatim, where they talk about what happened there. And in between the first installment and the second installment of Matan Torah, you have, among other things, Lo Tevashel Gedi B'Chalev Imo. So it belongs. It's part of that. And that's our message. The people who say only the Ten Commandments were given at Sinai are just looking at Parshat Yitro, and they forgot to read the rest of Mishpatim and the end of Mishpatim, and they'll see that there was a lot more at Sinai than that.
Okay, we're back for a couple of minutes to the, I was going to say we're back live, but you know the drill. This is being recorded, but at least it's not the recording that was made before that was recorded. It was my voice now. Anyway, we heard a major chunk of a mini-shir on one or two aspects of Parshat Yitro. I have another piece on a different aspect. Also from that same shiur to the folders, I got carried away a little, I guess, today. And that's why the show is pressed for time. It's going on the air in a very short time from now. I'd like you to listen to a very nice song from an album called Vahavi Enu 2, music of Danny Kunstler, Yitzhak Scratchy Yenowitz, and Aryeh Kunstler. The song is Baruch Elokeinu, Baruch Hu Elokeinu, Blessed is God, Sheber Anu Lechvodo, who created us to his honor, Vehivdil, and he separated us as a nation apart from other nations, and gave us the Torah, appropriate then for Shabbat Parshat Yitro, when we read about receiving the Torah. In addition to acknowledging God and blessing him for choosing us to receive the Torah, we also ask him something. Hu yiftach libeinu, let him open our hearts to be receptive to Torah learning, to Torah values, to Torah and mitzvot. It's got to go together. It's nice that he chose to give us the Torah, but we have to be receptive to the Torah, and we ask God's help in that, because it isn't easy. So, we will hear the song from Vahavi Enu 2, Baruch Elokeinu, or Baruch Hu Elokeinu, and then another chunk of a shiur that I gave on Parshat Yitro a short while ago, and if there's time, we'll sum it up with a couple of other points. Thanks for listening, and thanks for being tolerant of the change in volume, and my stuffed nose, etc., etc. by Danny Kunstler, Yitzhak Scratchy Yenowitz, and Aryeh Kunstler, Vahavid Eidu, Volume 2. And here is a mini shiur on a very upstanding topic.
Let me just say a few more words about the Aseret HaDibrot. You know that there's an old controversy, not a controversy, there's an old discussion about the custom of standing for the reading of Aseret HaDibrot. I wrote a little paragraph on it. Basically, there's a major objection to doing anything that will point to the Ten Commandments as more important than the rest of the Torah. And that's because it's very easy for people to say that it is. All you got to do is go to the movies and see the Ten Commandments. And you know that that's what God gave at Sinai. If we want to reinforce the idea that all of Torah was given at Sinai, and the Ten Commandments was like a down payment, a deposit in stone for that which was going to be taught to the people in the course of the 40 years of wandering, then Chazal, through the generations, tried to downplay, not chas v'chalila to insult the Aseret HaDibrot, but the Aseret HaDibrot naturally was grabbed on by people of all types, Jew and non-Jew, and elevated, and Chazal tried to keep it in its place. One of the things they did, for example, was vote against its recitation in the daily davening. Just like we have Shema in the davening, just like we have Oz Yashir in the davening, there was a move to have Aseret HaDibrot as part of the davening. And it really makes sense, and it really would be appropriate, to the point where many Sidurim have the Aseret HaDibrot as a private, personal reading after Shacharit. But it was rejected from being put into the davening in public, not to open the mouths of those that say that's what God gave and nothing else. Similarly, there was a period of time where it was banned, that's a hard word to say with a stuffed nose, it was forbidden to have the image of the Luchot in shul decoration. Now that's obviously not in our time, because we're used to seeing Luchot on the Parochet and above the Aron Kodesh and on windows and on the benches themselves. I think I remember seeing from my childhood the side of each bench had some kind of carved wood thing. A Mugget David on one row and a Luchot on another row and whatever. At least that's my memory. No one can prove me right or wrong, because the shul... Well, it exists. It's now Chabad, but I don't think any of the original furniture is there. I actually went back to the shul a number of years ago to see if they had the brass plaques, which I remembered from the back of the shul, where my great-grandfather and great-grandmother had memorial plaques. And they said, are you kidding? The shul was vandalized so many times, and that bronze was a prize of the guys that stole from it. Yeah. No, because it was the only thing that had value. Anyway, so it's not part of the daily davening. It was banned at a certain period from synagogue decoration. And one of the issues that comes in its wake is this minhag of standing for the Torah reading of Aseret HaDibrot. Now, anybody that stands for Torah reading all the time doesn't have a problem. It was the fact, and anyone who sits all the time doesn't have a problem. It's just singling it out. For standing was seen as objectionable along the same lines as this other issues. However, it's a time-honored custom. So... by the way, I should add, nobody challenges the custom of standing for Kriyat Yamsuf, Shirat Hayam, last week. That's accepted, and nobody's worried about it, because that wasn't the issue. The issue is Aseret HaDibrot. Nobody questions the minhag of standing for the end of each book at Chazak. Aseret HaDibrot. You have a range in today's writings from people who really are not bothered by it. It's an old custom, so you do it. To people who are violently opposed to it. That's not politically correct to say violently opposed. They are vociferously opposed. Did I use the word correctly? I don't even know. I'll have to look it up. And Rav Avadia Yosef, I would say, is the leader in anti-standing for Aseret HaDibrot. Even he writes that it is not proper to be a Yoshev Bein HaOmdim, someone who sits among people who stand, and he therefore recommends different things to get out of the problem. Either don't go to that shul on that Shabbos, or stand for the whole reading at least of Parshat Yitro. There are some that actually write that because the rabbi of the shul was honored with the aliyah for the Aseret HaDibrot, that if you stand for him when he's called up to the Torah and remain standing, it's not objectionable anymore. And there are some who will get up a little bit before, at least the beginning of that aliyah, which has some extra stuff in it, and remain standing afterwards, whatever. In any event, On a different angle, there are those who don't really know who first coined the term the Ten Commandments. Because we don't call it that in Hebrew. The Torah calls it Aseret HaDivarim. Not even Aseret HaDibrot. That would be interesting to know where it first was called Aseret HaDibrot. You don't have to ask where it was first called Aseret HaDivarim. That's in the Chumash. But it's 10 statements more than it is 10 commandments. And if you define a commandment as synonymous with mitzvah, then I always like to point out to people that there are 14 mitzvot in the Aseret HaDibrot, not 10. And that's because the second command against idolatry has four different prohibitions. One that goes to thought, lo yihyeh lecha elohim achirim al panai, and the others that go to action, not making idols, not bowing to idols, not worshiping in other forms. Shabbat, commandment number 4, is made up of 2 mitzvot. Zachor et yom ha-shabbat l'kadsho, make kiddush, lo ta'aseh kol malacha, thou shalt not do any manner of malacha on Shabbat, the prohibitions. And that's where you get your extra 4. 1 extra from Shabbat, 3 extra from idolatry, total of 14. But it's more complicated than that. It's also interesting to point out that lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo ta'aneh b'reacha ein sheker, shoker, which are commandments number 6, 7, 8, and 9, are all in the same pasuk. One pasuk. In fact, I'm not going to be able to do it justice, but in one way to read the Aseret HaDibrot, you read those, lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, lo tignov, lo taneh b'reacha, ein shaker, just like a pasuk. The other way of reading it is lo tirtzach, lo tinaf, as if you could hear a drum roll. Lo tignov, lo taneh b'reacha ein shaker, and that is known. I'm not going to go through it all now, but it's known as tamei ha'elyon and tamei ha'tachton, 2 sets of Torah notes to read the Aseret HaDibrot. The old Chumashim in Shul printed both sets of notes in the text. So you couldn't read either of them. Because they interrupted. Here, in this Chumash, in the Chumash itself, they do one set of notes, and on the bottom, they have the other. Now, the major difference, which is important for us to know, is what's known as Ta'amei HaTachton, the lower notes, and that's because most of them are under the words. The fancier notes are above the words, just works out that way. The Ta'amei HaTachton treats the portion of the Aseret HaDibrot like Psukim. No different from any place else in the Torah. The Ta'amei HaElyon disregards Psukim and reads them as commandments or as Dibrot, which is part of the answer to a confusion. If you look at in some Chumashim, at the end of each Sedra, they tell you how many psukim there were in the Sedra. This one says Ayin Bet, which is 72. If you count them, there are 75 psukim in Yitro. And the discrepancy can be explained if you consider the Aseret HaDibrot to be 9 rather than 13. It's made up of 13 psukim. But it is read as if it's 9, not even 10, 9 commands. Because Anochi Hashem Elokecha and Lo Yelecha are melted into one. So if you count them as 9 instead of 13, that's a discrepancy of 4. Take that back. If you count them as 10 instead of 13, that accounts for the extra 3. Why we count 75 psukim, but tradition says there are only 72. Now, the standard practice of Jews all over the world, and most of Israel, is to read the Aseret HaDibrot in public as Dibrot, which means the fancier, more dramatic reading of the Ta'amei HaElyon. The Ta'amei HaTachton is not used. It's there. When you sit at home and you review the Sedra and you want to lane it, you use Ta'amei HaTachton. Minhag Yerushalayim is to read it with Ta'amei HaTachton on Shabbat Parshat Yitro, and again in Shabbat Parshat Vo'ed Chanan, and only on Shavuot morning, when the special Torah reading is this again, there the drama comes in, and only on Shavuot morning do you read Ta'amei HaElyon. I remember when I first came on Aliyah, my first Parshat Yitro, I'm sitting in shul, and the guy starts laning in Ta'amei HaTachton. A guy that had become my friend who was sitting next to me saw me tense up when he started reading in Ta'amei HaTachton, because I'd never heard that before. And he put his hand on my arm and said, wait. As soon as the Aliyah was over, he said, Minhag Yerushalayim is to read it in Ta'amei HaTachton. I said, okay. You know, you find out about these things. The following year, I remember, I was in a shul, and the guy started laying in Ta'amei HaElyon. So by that time, I was a veteran already, so I tensed up. And after the Aliyah, I found out that the guy that read the Torah was an American. He didn't know that there was a difference. He prepared to read Ta'amei HaElyon. When the Gabbai told him that the minhag is to read Ta'amei HaTachton, he panicked. He said, okay, read it any way you want. So that's the way it goes. It's not that fast and hard, but that's the way it is. Rav Avadia Yosef, I mentioned before, has a tshuva very much against standing for the Aseret HaDibrot. However, Rav Chaim David HaLevi, Zichrono Livracha, who was chief rabbi of Tel Aviv Yafo, Sfardi, includes Rav Avadia Yosef's tshuva, but he goes in a very softer direction by saying, I can't slam this custom, even though halachically it makes sense not to stand, because it is a time-honored custom through the generations. He found it a little arrogant. He didn't say it like that, because I think he didn't want to say it about the other Sephardi rabbi that I referred to. But he found it arrogant to say that generations of Rabbonim, who all go to shul and all stand for Kriyat HaTorah of Aseret HaDibrot, were wrong. And therefore, he says, if a community would come to him and say, we are, I'm exaggerating this a little, but not too much, we are a new community of converts to Judaism. We have no existing minhagim, and we are opening up a shul, and one of the questions we want to know is, should we stand or sit for Aseret HaDibrot? He would tell them to sit. But you get the point. If it's not a convert, and someone that comes from someplace and has minhag, then it's not something you toss out. After all, the Aseret HaDibrot, as much as you want to normalize the attitude towards them, are special. You can't help that. So what he says is my feeling goes towards opposing standing for Kriyat HaTorah of Aseret HaDibrot, but I'm not ready to say that because they are special. And if that's what developed, it developed. That's why he put it like that. You know, if they were to ask me and they had no existing minhag, I would say don't. Again, I don't have a problem because I stand. What I used to do as a kid was stand up straighter. You know, how do you show respect for something and stand when you're already standing? Just a digression for a moment. I remember years of watching TV with my father, especially Perry Mason and The Defenders and all the legal shows. And my father used to point out the different ways the bailiff can tell you to stand. If he says, will you please rise, then what about a person who's already standing? How does he listen to the request or the instruction to please rise? He found in some of the British shows, they would say, be upstanding. To be upstanding applies to those that are sitting as well as to those who are already standing. So anyway, in that vein, I used to, you know, if I would put my arm on the bench or something, so I would, you know, stand up straighter, put my feet together, totally unnecessary. If you're standing, you're standing. If you're sitting, you're sitting. What I don't like is when there's a wise guy in a shul, it's not nice to call him that because he's not really a wise guy, who will sit, in other words, be a yoshev bein ha'omdim, and if once in a while I get up the nerve to go and say something, after davening, of course, he will say, Rav Avadi Yosef. I say, look, Rav Avadi Yosef was very opposed to standing, but he said, don't be a Yoshev Beit HaOmdim. It's as if they didn't read that far. By the way, Rav Avadi Yosef's tshuvot, the way they're printed, question, long answer, summary. So a lot of people, myself included, you hear the question, you don't feel like wading through all the way he got to the answer, so you jump to the sikum, but you miss. You miss a lot. And that's why these guys who say, oh, Rav Avadi Yosef says not to stand, he says, don't be a Yoshev Beit HaOmdim.
Apologies again for the difference in volume. I don't really know how to modulate the recording I do on the MP3 for a shear out of my office compared with the recording that I'm doing right now at my computer on a program called Cool Edit 96. But that's the inside story. This second apology, by the way, is being heard only by those listening to Torah Tidbits Audio on OU Radio. The people who listen to it on Israel National Radio, Arut Sheva, got only one apology in the beginning because the show is a shorter format. Anyway, I'd like you to listen to another track of Ahavienu, as we had before. This one called Sameach. You'll recognize the words, of course, from the Sheva Brachot of a wedding. So first, take the song as a mazel tov to those people getting married now, or with anniversaries now. But also relate it to Parshat Yitro, because the experience at Sinai is sometimes thought of as a marriage, a chuppah, between HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God, and the people of Israel. And therefore, we too wish Mazel Tov to all of Klal Yisrael because of the wedding that we read about in this week's Parsha. The anniversary, of course, is Shavuot, but we read about it this week. One of the messages of Parshat Yitro comes from the analysis of the first verse in chapter 19. Bachodesh Hashlishi Letzeit Bnei Yisrael Me'eretz Mitzrayim, in the third month of the Exodus, Bayom Hazeh Ba'u Midbar Sinai, on this day we came to Sinai. The obvious question, which is asked by many of the commentaries, is what is the significance of Bayom Hazeh, on this day? When you're telling a story, it's Bayom Hahu, once upon a time, on that day. And the lesson here is that the experience of Sinai should not be just the subject of a story retold through the generations, but it should be a story which we internalize and personalize, and one should take a fresh outlook as if you yourself, I myself, we ourselves, receive the Torah this very day, Bayom Hazeh. Now, I would like to apply this to something that we get from the second verse. Vayisu me'Refidim, and they, plural, traveled from Refidim. Vayavo'u midbar Sinai, and they arrived at the Sinai desert. Vayachanu b'midbar, they camped, they, plural, camped in the wilderness. Vayichan sham Yisrael neged ha'har. When it came to camping at the foot of the mountain, Mount Sinai, the Torah uses the term in singular, Vayichan sham Yisrael, Israel, as a single entity, camped at the mountainside. And the analysis is Ki ish echad b'lev echad, as one person with one heart and one goal. This is a symbol of Jewish unity, a moment which gives validity to what we say in the Pesach Haggadah, Ilu kervanu lefnei har Sinai, had you only brought us to Sinai, v'lo natan lanu et haTorah, and had not given us the Torah, dayenu. Dayenu here means, as in all of them, I would have sufficient cause to thank you, even without the next step. Obviously, being brought to Sinai was in order to give us the Torah. But the Sinai experience, and you can point to this, Vayichad Shom Yisrael Neged Ahar, the Jewish unity, is something to be thankful for, and something to strive for always. It is a moment that is probably never been realized since, and who knows when we will realize it again. But that's not as important as working towards it. And that means in the context of now, Bayom Hazeh, on this day, we have to do our best, take steps, expend effort towards the goal of Jewish unity. It is certainly not an easy thing to achieve, but it is something that we have to always strive for, and little step by little step will give it its meaning. The truth of the matter is, I have no idea how to even take a step towards Jewish unity if we're talking about some Jews who want to give more and more land and statehood to Arabs, and Jews who believe that the territorial concessions of the disengagement in Gaza was an abomination, should never have been done, and should never be repeated. So I really don't know what to do there. Religious and non-religious, or religious and anti-religious, I don't really know where we're going to work towards Jewish unity there. Doesn't mean not to, but I don't know those things. I do have a very strong feeling, though, that within religious groups, the differences of more religious, less religious, more meticulous, less meticulous, should not yield and should not be compromised, but can fit into a framework of working towards greater Jewish unity. A policy of no Palestinian state within the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and a policy of no territorial concessions until there will be real peace in the offing, are different from each other, but they could stand a chance to become more unified. I don't know if that's getting across, but I'm just throwing that on the table as a lesson from Parshat Yitro. Jewish unity, a goal, a challenge, and something to strive for. On that note, I wish you a Shabbat Shalom and Lehishtameah.